expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily express those of KCNR Radio and its sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. Readers and listeners are advised that neither KCNR Radio nor its owners and agents shall be held liable for the content of this program.
San Francisco's finally clean. It's really nice to see that the governor ended up clearing it up for his president.
Yeah, the governor or the gruesomator. Anyway, today's Sunday, November 19th, 2023. My name is Mark Kent. I'm your host. You're listening to Sovereign Mind Radio. This is KCNR, home of the Free Fire Media, community radio for the North State, your talk radio. Just saying. 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. My sister Linda is out doing something somewhere with somebody.
Sounds like a good time.
That's great. I think she's out running guard for duty for, you know, some kind of a motorcade or something this morning. I'm not sure exactly what the whole thing was. I get my mind on a one track thing and I can't remember what somebody's. Is it they're telling me what they're right to my face, and I'll go, what? So she's out there doing something good for the community, I guarantee you.
And so do you, my friend.
Oh, thank you, Terry.
Thanks for saving my life last night.
Oh, well, it's just another day in the life of a hero.
The modesty there, it just he exudes from you.
Hey, good beard.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like that beard.
You know what? I should remember.
I like that.
Yeah, he looks better.
It looks great. Yeah, don't shave it off. It's good.
If it could just completely cover.
Oh, hey, Dad. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, he's a young guy.
He looked like a wolfman.
That's what they said about Lincoln. So, did you guys ever hear the story about Lincoln? So, he was so ugly.
Do you want me to introduce you first?
Sure.
And we have Cyber Dave, the bearded one, over in the corner over there. It looks like he's not just got a 5 o'clock shadow. He's got like a eclipse going on over there.
Good morning.
Yeah, very good. And we also have a special guest today. He's our guest. I'm not sure how special he is, but I think he's special. Terry Raposa of Jefferson State of Mine.
Yeah.
There you go.
How are you, brother?
Hey, the fun never freaking stops.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead, Dave. Tell us your story.
So the story was you had Abraham Lincoln went to a little girl, and the little girl was scared by him and said, you should grow a beard. And so he did. So that was the thing. He was apparently pretty ugly. He grew a beard, and then afterwards there was that.
Abe Lincoln was pretty homely, buddy. Let me tell you. Yeah, as time went on, it wasn't kind to his face.
Yeah, like the bottom of a truck.
But it's almost like I thought you were going towards a Biden. Yeah, you're kind of creeping me out, and maybe you should grow a beard and quit sniffing things, you know.
He was frisky.
I don't think the beard would help him as far as the sniffing things. It would just like help aerate it a little more. Like a
I'm gonna do my thing I do for the kids. I have no idea where we're going. I guess we got a caller coming
in. Well, we do have. Mark Baird was supposed to be calling in this morning. Talking about the Second Amendment case that he has going, Baird.
There's some new information?
There is. And I would try to explain it, but I probably wouldn't get it out the way it needs to be.
But he's not he's not on the line yet, so we'll just kind of
go. There he is right now.
Is he there?
There he is right now. There,
yeah, because I got a whole show on this January 6th thing that we can do, you know. And but I want to get to Mark first. Yeah, there's a bunch of crap that hit over the weekend that it's just, let me tell you, it's going to get ugly here quickly over this stuff because, you know, this is... Yeah, well, I'll explain it. Stay tuned for the rest of the part of the show that's going to address that. But for now, we have Mark Baird, a gentleman, a scholar, a patriot, legal mind par excellence, and he's with us, and he's going to give us an update. What's up, Mark?
Oh, you make me want to hang up, guys.
That's how I feel when they call me a hero. I was like,
oh. He is a hero. Mark's a hero.
Yeah, no kidding.
You're both heroes.
Well, I did talk to you before about how we had the hearing on November 3rd, and essentially the state presented no new evidence to restrict the open carry of loaded weapons. They have nothing. They presented nothing. In fact, the judge asked them at the close. I'll just recap this for the few people, for the one or two people in the state of California that may not have heard the broadcast last time.
It depends on how far south of the Mason-Dixon line you're talking.
Yeah, well, since the Mason-Dixon line is pretty much at Red Bluff, there's probably quite a few. But the judge asked the state's attorney, "Can you present one single law that caused people to have to ask for permission or a license prior to carry in the United States in 1791?" And the state's attorney, Haddad or something. She said, "No, Your Honor, because there aren't any." Well, that's pretty interesting. And they admitted that they have nothing. So then the judge asked the state's attorney, "Well, did you ever present that list of laws I asked you for?" So a sua sponte request from the judge asking the state for additional information that the state did not think to provide in the first place. Oops. That's a little outside the Ninth Circuit's directive to her, helping the state make its case.
I want to play the tune. State said, I want to play some music called Feelings, you know?
Yeah.
Because it seems like that's what they're operating on is, I have a feeling. Who are these guys? Are these guys attorneys or psych majors or something? It's like ridiculous. We don't have any law or nothing to back up what we're saying. We just have a feeling that we should win.
Well, it's interesting what the judge did, Mark. What she did as far as what you were telling me the other day, how she sort of interjected and was helping the defense.
I apologize. It just makes me so mad when I hear that crap, you know?
Well, they're not psych majors as much as they are psychotic majors.
Well, there
I mean,
you go.
They operate on a principle that may or may not be, but most of the time is not true, and then they're willing to go to the mat on that principle, and they're willing to steal your liberty, and they're willing to steal your freedom, your money, your property, your independence, and everything else in pursuit of that cause. And that's what this is. This is an unreasonable fear of an inanimate object that in 45 states of the Union, 27 of which require no permit whatsoever to carry weapons concealed openly or however you want to carry them, and they have this unreasonable fear that this inanimate object is going to cause them to, and it has nothing to do with the violence that occurs when someone shoots someone. It has nothing to do with that. Is the unreasonable fear that they will no longer have absolute and total control over you that drives them. And I know that for a fact because in one of the hearings, the state's attorney was stammering, literally stammering, but, Your Honor, they just want to have guns without asking permission. That was it. You know, the gun was a word he kind of passed over pretty quickly. They want to do something, they, meaning the people of the state of California, grateful to Almighty God for our freedom, that we, you know, in order to secure its blessings, we hereby establish this Constitution. That people, the people who formed the state of California and formed its Constitution. Grateful to Almighty God for our liberty, by the way. And they are so terrified that they, meaning the people of the state of California, will have the ability to do something without government permission. They are absolutely horrified at the prospect. Horrified. And that's what drives this. It isn't the weapon. It is the fear that you'll be able to walk out your door and do something that isn't unlawful without government permission, and that over which they would have no control.
Well, that's the definition. That's what drives this. That's the definition of tyranny, is arbitrary abuse of power. In other words, if I can make everything legal or illegal at my whim, if I can control you through license fees, permits, whatever it happens to be, and then I control you on everything of your life. You're a slave, basically.
Well, pretty much. I mean, if they want you to eat bugs, you're going to eat bugs. If they want you to walk instead of drive, you're going to walk instead of drive, and it goes on and on from there. And what is the reason the Second Amendment was incorporated into the Constitution again?
It was.
Well, I know.
Go ahead. I was going to say it wasn't for self defense against your robbery and stuff. It was for self defense against the government.
Oh, I was going to say target practice and hunting, but yeah, I think you're right. I mean, the Second Amendment was there because we had just fought a terrible war with a tyrannical king who attempted to violate God's laws, disarm the people. And, you know, it's funny, there were a couple of historians in the 20s or 30s, their name was Beard or something, and close to mine, but not quite. And they changed the meaning of the Revolutionary War from liberty to money. And they said, well, it was taxation without representation. That's not true. I mean, the Declaration of Independence has 27 causes to separate from the King of England, and only a few of them had anything to do about money. Most of them had to do with violation of God's law, which is perfect liberty. And the reason we band together as societies is to protect the liberty that we hold most dear from those who would come and take it from us. Well, what happens when it's your own government that's going to come and take it from you? That's why we have a Second Amendment. And that's what scares them so terribly.
Well, historically, it hasn't been other governments that take your freedom. Wars are fought and so forth. But historically, the ones that take your freedom are your own government.
Well, look, Abraham Lincoln said it best. He said that there is no army of Europe or Asia that will ever be powerful enough to either leave a footprint on the Allegheny Mountains or take a drink from the Mississippi River or one of those rivers. I forget which one he said. If we are to be destroyed, we will be the authors of our own destruction. It will come from within. And he was right.
Yep.
He's right about a lot of things, but that was one of them. So what the judge and what courts and judges do now is they steal your liberty every day, and they use the auspices of legality in the judicial system in order to do it, because there is no process through which a judge can be held accountable for either violating their own rules, violating the law, violating the rules of civil procedure, violating the rules of evidence. There is no process to hold an individual judge accountable for that, with the single exception of impeachment, which is reserved pretty much for criminal behavior, like pedophilia, stuff like that. And even then, very few judges have ever been removed from the bench for violating the law. Very few. It just doesn't happen. So what we've come to accept in this nation, this body of so-called God-given liberty, is the fact that we have tyranny from the judicial branch based on the truth that they don't follow their own rules, and they don't follow the rule of law, and they don't follow Supreme Court precedent, and they don't even follow the precedent of their own appellate court, even though they say, and they're willing to put you in jail if you argue with them, that they do. And what this judge did was violated federal rules of procedure 42421, and violated her own standing order that all documents will be filed, I believe it was September 29th, or October 29th, but I could be wrong about that. It might be a day or two either way. In other words, all documents in my case prior to the summary judgment hearing were to have been filed prior to the day of the hearing. Okay, well, then she asked the state, well, did you ever file your list of the analogous laws dating back to 1791 that prohibit the open carry of weapons? And the state's attorney said, no, Your Honor, we didn't do that. we were hoping you'd give us another week to do it. Well, the judge's standing order was all documents were to be filed. Okay, well, according to federal rules of procedure and according to the order she was given from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals regarding abuse of discretion that she was already guilty of, she was not to help the state make its case. The plaintiffs make a case, the defendants make a case, the judge compares the two cases and decides based on which case was more favorably presented. So, sua sponte, she says, and that means of her own free will, of her own volition, without any urging from anyone else, okay, you can have another week to do that. And then she turns to our attorney and she says to Amy, and you can, of course, have a couple of days to comment on this latest submission. And we're like, oh, boy, okay, here we go again. So the state is trying for a third bite at the apple, because they've already had two filings, which we responded to, and then they respond to our response. Then we respond to their response to our response. And then they tried again to do what they call a surreply, because they didn't feel like they got enough of the last word in. So they file a fourth paper arguing the three other papers that we've already argued, and then we have to file a fifth paper. And what this turns into is this insufferable, eternal tit-for-tat thing.
It's called lawfare. So, it's lawfare, Mark. I mean, it's pure and simple. These guys are using the law as a weapon of war.
Well, of course they are. But what turned out happening was, after the hearing, literally a little more than a week after, I think it was, the state filed this list of analogous laws dating back to 1791, which prohibited the open carry of loaded weapons, okay? So kind of keep that thought in mind. Well, this little filing, because they'd already filed 37 examples in their previous papers that did not prohibit the open carry of weapons to lawful individuals for the purposes of self-defense or defense against tyranny. They did not file those. They filed 37 examples of riotous behavior, brandishing, drunk with while armed, writing about in order to frighten people, arming yourself with intent to murder, murdering someone, assaulting someone, so on and so forth. But not one single law in any of their papers in 5 years that restricted the open carry of loaded weapons by peaceful individuals, lawful individuals, with the intent to defend themselves, their community, their state, or their nation. Not one single example. Okay, so now let's fast forward back to the filing. They filed 1,190 pages of data, for which we had 2 days to respond.
That's ridiculous.
1,190 pages of additional information, they claim. They called it additional evidence to prohibit the open carry of loaded weapons. Well, they violated the judge's standing order, all documents to be filed before the hearing. They violated Rule 420 and 421 of civil procedure. They violated the Ninth Circuit's order. So they submit this 1,190 pages, and we had 2 days to respond to that. In addition to that, they resubmitted all of the paperwork they've already submitted three times, hoping the judge would read it a different way the third or fourth time than she read it the first three times. Okay? Well, our response was literally, because according to the Bruin case, if the plain text of the amendment covers the conduct of the individual, then that conduct is presumptively constitutional, which means the burden falls 100% to the government to prove that the conduct is not constitutional based on the history, text, and tradition of the Second Amendment dating back to 1791, and the government bears 100% of the burden to show an analogous regulation, widely held, widely received, widely supported, that would prohibit the peaceful open carry of a loaded weapon by lawful individuals for the purposes of self-defense or defense against tyranny. Okay? Well, they presented nothing like that. And in the 1,190 pages, which we were forced to go through, a very expensive few days, by the way, and they presented no new information. Well, the definition of evidence under federal rules of procedure is information that is new and that adds to the discussion at hand. In other words, it presents facts not known prior that would alter the perception of the court or of the parties involved as to the question before the court. Well, our attorney looked through all this stuff, and in 1,190 pages, which essentially was just volumes and volumes of territorial, colonial, state laws, I mean, they didn't go through even and make sure they were firearms laws. They just grabbed volumes of territorial laws and submitted it in an attempt to bury us in paperwork and to impress the judge with their prowess so that the judge would say, oh, yeah, well, with this volume of information, the state has to be right. But not one single one of those laws, except for one, it was a town ordinance in Nebraska in 1875 that banned the carry of weapons at all. And so what our attorney did was she objected to the entire ream of paper. She objected to the process. She objected to the judge's behavior. And she pointed out that, that the government may regulate the manner of carry only if it demonstrates that the regulation is identical or closely analogous to a firearm regulation broadly in effect when the Second or 14th Amendment was ratified. And that was the order from the Ninth Circuit. And the 14th Amendment can only be considered, that history can only be considered when it confirms the text of the Second Amendment. It cannot be considered, according to the Bruin Court, when it refutes the text of the Second Amendment because the text controls. So the one regulation they did present was offensive to the plain text of the Second Amendment. It was too far outside the founding period and therefore should be stricken. That was one law in 1,190 pages that had to do with banning the carry of a weapon in any way, much less concealed, open, you know, any way whatsoever.
I mean, so it seems to me, what's the response? I mean, I find myself thinking about the Battle of the Bulge when they sent a message back to the Germans, oh, nuts. You know, I mean, why?
Well, that's exactly what we said.
Yeah.
We said nuts.
Really?
Because unless the state can prove its case 100% of the burden that that regulation changes the unqualified command of the Second Amendment, and the unqualified command of the Second Amendment is as follows. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Period.
Now, the word bear has been defined by, of all people, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a far leftist judge who has passed away and been replaced by a better judge. But Ruth Bader Ginsburg defined the term bear as to wear, bear, or carry outside your clothing, open carry, in a pocket or in your clothing, any instrument capable of offensive or defensive use in the event of conflict with another person. That is the definition of bear, to wear, bear, or carry on your person, in your pocket, or in your clothing. That defines both concealed and open carry. It does not demand a permit. It does not demand a license. The state's attorney admitted on the record that there was no such law asking for permission from the government prior to the carry of a loaded weapon because none existed in 1791. And that's not me talking. That's the state's attorney making an admission on the record.
So where do we go?
They have nothing. They have never had anything. They still have nothing. We will not hear about our objection, though. Here, this is the other rub about the case. So the state made its grand discovery of 1,200 pages of new stuff. We made our objection of all of it, and we won't hear whether the judge sides with us or not. We won't ever hear about that. It will come out in the summary judgment filing whether she read the stuff or not.
So you get summary judgment, and you're right back up to the Ninth Circuit and the three-judge panel?
Well, if she rules in our favor, and this was the other aspect of the hearing that was so interesting, our attorney brought out, you know, Your Honor, every state in the Ninth Circuit already has open carry except two, California and Hawaii.
Right, that's right.
So it's not like this is a broadly overreaching choice you have to make. It only affects two states in the Ninth Circuit because everybody else already acknowledges that open carry is the law of the land and is constitutional. Well, that gave the judge something to think about, and strategically, she could take the loss on this and give us this case and would suffer very little political fallout because it only affects two states. Now, if the state of California, in its utter and absolute despotism and seeking the tyranny that it so desperately enjoys, in their arrogance, if they appeal this and they lose that appeal at the Supreme Court level, now everybody in the nation has unpermitted open carry.
Hey, Mark, can you save that? I want to hear the rest of this for sure, but we got to go to a hard break here, so hang on to your hat there, because I want to know about time frames and what's the next step. So let's go to a break, and we'll be right back.
Lane Antiques and Vintage in the Shasta Gateway Center on Highway 273 in Anderson has teamed up with KCNR for Operation Holiday Salute to thank our veterans and those currently serving in the military for their service. Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage features one-of-a-kind decorations, ornaments, wreaths, and garlands, vintage glassware and table settings, paintings, jewelry, sports memorabilia, and collectibles along with toys and treasures in the Shasta Gateway Center on Highway 273. Open Wednesday through Saturday, 10 to 6, Sunday, noon to 5, and Monday, 10 to 6.
Do you have that dream of a book burning a hole into your soul? It's not too late to join us for National Novel Writing Month to make that dream a reality. Find us at NaNoWriMo.org to connect. That's NaNoWriMo.org. And of course, this holiday season, we want to thank our troops, both active and retired, for the opportunity you've given us to make these dreams come true. So we give a big salute to our troops.
Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market Street and Eureka Way in downtown Reading has the perfect gift this holiday season. Car wash packages starting at only $11. They make great stocking stuffers and are excellent gifts for those who are a little hard to shop for. Choose from four different car wash packages. Buy five car wash packages and get one free. Or buy 10 and get three free. Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market Street and Eureka Way in downtown Reading. Quick and clean.
Considering the purchase of an e-bike, why not get more bang for your buck? Reading Electric Utilities e-bike program offers $1,000 towards an e-bike and $150 towards a lock and helmet for income-eligible applicants. With gas and car prices on the rise, there's no better time to take advantage of the new cycling connections in Reading. Join the movement to save some green while going green. E-biking means more fun, more trails for your tires, and more smiles per mile. Find out if you qualify at cityofreading.org/rebates.
It sits above the mantle on a couple rusty nails. Ain't worth a lot of money, and it damn sure ain't for sale. Good Lord only knows all the stories it could tell. My granddaddy's gone. He bought it new out of the Sears Roebuck catalog. It shot a many shells over the back of an old bird dog. It backed the burglar down when Grandma took the safety off Granddaddy's gun. Just an old double barrel 12, stock is cracked and kicks like hell. Wouldn't mean what it means to me to no one. Shoulder, her guns like a woman, son, and saw how you hold her. Taught me a whole lot more than how to hunt. fit under my grandson. My granddaddy's gone.
Listening to Sovereign Minds, you know, that reminded me of a story of my grandpa. You know, he had this old 16-gauge that had the stock cut off, and he called it the Nosebuster. I'll leave it there. So, I hadn't thought about that for a while. Anyway, we're back here with Mark Baird, and let's talk about time frames and repercussions and where we're going, and is this, you know, gal going to be able to drag this out any more time? I mean, this is just getting to the point of ridiculous, you know, and that's what they're trying to do is just make this as long and as costly and, you know, justice delayed is justice denied. And I think that's exactly what their whole, strategy is. So what do you think, Mark? Are you there? Am I talking to myself?
Yeah, I'm here. You said, what do I think? And that broke me.
Oh.
Well, what I think is probably not repeatable on
yeah, that's where I'm at too.
But yeah, but it's pretty obvious. And look, the Ninth Circuit saw through this whole thing right from the beginning. And look, it's probably easier for me to tell you what they thought, because they're the ones that could enforce some kind of order against this judge. And problematically, as the plaintiff in this case, the civil rights case, a very important one, a constitutional enumerated rights case, you have no power to tell the judge when to do their job, how to do their job, or whether or not they're even going to do their job. But supposedly, according to Judge Mueller, the Ninth Circuit has that power because she has made this very clear to the point of getting mad at our attorney on several occasions. Well, I don't follow Supreme Court precedent. I have to follow the precedent set forth by my circuit, which is the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Okay, so here's what the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals thinks about it, that that Judge Mueller's court's analysis, the district court's analysis of the factors, whether or not a preliminary injunction should be awarded, she abused her discretion and she abused her power and abused her office in banning that preliminary injunction because she failed to consider the four factors that are required to be considered when issuing a preliminary injunction. And the most important of those factors is the likelihood of success on the merits of the case. And Judge Mueller very pointedly and in the record said she purposefully ignored our likelihood of success on the merits. Maybe, she said, she would have to consider that in the merits phase of the trial, but she wouldn't consider it in a preliminary injunction. Well, the Ninth Circuit orders her to consider that, and they always have. It's called the Winters test. And in the Winters test, you have to be likely to succeed on the merits of the case. The balance of equities has to favor the plaintiff, that's us. The balance of harms has to favor the defendant for her to deny it. And the balance of public equities has to favor the defendant in order for her to deny it. So, but here's her problem in a constitutional case. Likelihood of success on the merits is the most important part of that, because if we're likely to succeed in the merits, the balance of harm has to be in our favor, because it is always irreparable harm to deny a constitutional guarantee, and that can never be compensated with money because there isn't enough money no matter how short the period of time is that that harm occurred. And then when you're suing the government, the last two factors blend together into one, because the government is incapable of suffering harm when they're simply prevented from enforcing an unconstitutional law, and the government can suffer no harm from failing to do that. And the balance of public equities is always in favor of maintaining constitutional guarantees. So really, in a constitutional case, if you're likely to succeed on the merits, you win. That's how this is written.
But
that's what the Ninth Circuit.
But that doesn't seem to be what's happening. But that's not what's happening here, is it?
Well, the Ninth Circuit also said it's been more than 4 years since the appellants moved for this preliminary injunction, and that is way too much time, and you need to do it again expeditiously. And then they ordered her to find in our favor if we're likely to succeed on the merits, which we are, because the state has no case. So the Ninth Circuit ordered her to do it. They gave her basically three time frames, which I thought was an error on their part. One was 10 days, one was 30 days, one was 60 days. So we appealed back to the Ninth Circuit at the end of the 30-day period and said she failed to follow your order. And guess what happened at that point? The sleeping giant awoken, and the Ninth Circuit en banc panel coordinator wanted to know from a brief from each of us, money, 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 why this case should not be yanked directly to the en banc panel of the Ninth Circuit like the Duncan Magazine case was, circumventing the entire process so that the balance of liberal judges could just dispose of this case without anyone else even hearing it. Well, that was a surprise. So when we ratted her out to the Ninth Circuit, all of a sudden the en banc panel got involved, and they want to know, why can't we just get rid of you like we're going to do the Duncan case, the 30-round magazine case? So the state filed a brief saying, well, that would be stupid because nothing's even been decided yet. And we filed a brief saying, well, that would be stupid because nothing's been decided yet. So the en banc panel, having their made to look stupid by both the state and the plaintiffs, they withdrew that. They just withdrew that question from the table. So now we're not in danger of going to the en banc panel again. So here's what we're going to do. At the 60-day point, we're going to rat her out again to the Ninth Circuit because, look, the summary judgment in this case is different from the preliminary injunction. She could take a year to decide the summary judgment, but she shouldn't be able to take a year, and the Ninth Circuit has ordered her not to take a year issuing the preliminary injunction, give us the right to open carry now.
When's the 60 days up? Because at that point, that would mean that the Ninth Circuit, in theory, I guess, should actually say the injunction is now in effect.
Well, what we're going to do when we rat her out again, when we tattle on her again, we're going to ask the Ninth Circuit, since the judge obviously has no intention of ruling on this in any way, shape, or form, much less according to your order, we want a permanent injunction issued right now in order to teach that court a lesson. So we're going to ask them to permanently enjoin those two statutes, and we'll have the right to open carry.
Well, which in effect is a win, because at that point you've proved your point, and now a permanent injunction, that they're not going to be able to get rid of it.
Well, they wouldn't be able to get rid of it, but here's the thing. Now we get back to that. In their zeal to ban everything, in their absolute arrogance, will they appeal that
to the Supreme Court
three-judge panel decision? Well, either to the en banc panel, which they could do, or to the Supreme Court. Now, or will they take the loss because their Democratic buddies in New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, Delaware, Massachusetts, and all those other places say to them, hey, don't screw us over. You only got two states on the burner here, but if you lose at the Supreme Court level, everybody has to deal with open carry.
Yeah, so it's either isolate the damage to your jurisdiction, or if it gets pushed up to the Supreme Court, it could just sink the whole thing.
And this is so important, Mark, that probably there are already at least five cases that have quoted this ruling from the Ninth Circuit in our case. In their cases, the 30-round magazine ban, the assault weapon ban in the state of Washington, in the Rahimi case, they quoted this case. That's before the Supreme Court now. We even quoted it in our own case just to rub our nose in it.
So that's so cool, because what that's doing is basically you're bundling it all up into using the Ninth Circuit as the cudgel, so to speak, to win the whole thing.
And it was a unanimous decision. I mean, there was no doubt about the way the judges felt in that. So we're hoping that, quite frankly, we're really hoping that if we rat her out again to the Ninth Circuit, and they do their job, and we're sending these letters directly to the judges on our panel. We're not just sending them to, quote, the Ninth Circuit. We're sending them to the three-judge panel that ruled on it. And what our hope is that they will either force her to act or act for her, or she will hurry up her decision on the summary judgment, because the only way to moot the preliminary injunction is to rule on the summary judgment. That's the only way she can get out of this.
You know, it's interesting.
Because the preliminary injunction would be moot if she rules on the case itself.
You know, it's interesting, Mark, is when you look at the founders and their checks and balances, you can really see this check and balance at work here, because I would assume that these guys up there that, you know, ruled against Mueller are not going to be super happy, because I imagine they would have to be monitoring the case as it is right now, knowing what she's doing. And they're not going to be super happy about her just defying them and thumbing her nose at them.
Oh, no, they will send a clear, if they decide to act, it will be a very clear message to the, quote, inferior court as to how they are to behave. And they were pretty emphatic in their ruling as to how she is to behave. She is not to adjudicate in favor of the state. She is merely to adjudicate between the two cases. She, and they ordered her to uphold the Constitution, quote, whether she likes the Constitution or not. I mean, there were several very pointed statements in that order to her, and that is an order to her as to how she is being directed to behave and to adjudicate this case, and she's violated that order already. So we're just kind of waiting for a time mark so that we can rat her out again.
Do you know what that? What do you have a Do you have a time frame that we can hang our hat on?
Yeah, I think it's. I think we're probably going to submit our filing within the next 20 or so days. It's been almost 60 days now, so we'll do it within the next 20 or so days. And what we're hoping for, the best result possible, would be a take back. What they call in the Ninth Circuit a take back case. And they love these take back cases because it gives them the opportunity to say no twice to something in spite of Bruin and in spite of Heller and in spite of McDonald and Citano. So if a panel that's already had a case, if that case has some kind of decision that sends it back to the court in general, in total, the Ninth Circuit, in other words, it would be highly likely we get exactly the same panel because they're already briefed on the case and they know what the case is about. Well, if we get the same panel, we know we'll win because they were unanimous in our favor before, and they were not very kind to the state about the fact that they've been trying to make their case for 5 years and failed to do it, and that the judge is helping them make their case and still failing to do it. So I'm hopeful to this, and you know, the founders were geniuses. Yeah, there are things they couldn't have anticipated, but they were definitely directed by God. They did a good job on the Constitution and a good job establishing courts and so on. And what we have to do as citizens is hold public officials accountable, and we can do that if we keep after it. You know, it's not an easy job, and it's not a job you can get tired of. You got to go at it with commitment, and you can't quit. If you don't quit, you can win.
So, you know, I'm just thinking in terms of what the judge's, Mueller's, jeopardy actually is. Is it a matter of, gee, if I rule against these guys, my friends are all going to like me, but if I rule for them, you know, then my friends are going to hate me down there in Sacramento. But at least I won't be putting black marks on my judicial record for nomination later to a higher post. Is that her jeopardy?
Well, I think that has to be in her thought process. She can't be ignorant of those things. And you're right. Is she more interested in being a good little Democratic hack, or is she more interested in being considered an adequate or a good jurist? And that's the open question now. I have to say what my leaning is. My leaning is that she hates the idea that we're going to win. But in the last hearing, she was fairly deferential to our side. I mean, she did not give, other than the fact that she did the sua sponte thing for the 1,200 pages, she was pretty hard on the state and asked the state's attorney several questions that she couldn't answer. And we've got the transcript coming because we're going to hold her to the letter of that transcript, too. And the state admitted that there was not one single law in 1791 that forced a person to ask permission of the government prior to the open carry of a loaded weapon, or a concealed weapon, for that matter. I mean, you know, I was at a CRPA dinner last night, and I talked to the statewide outreach coordinator, and he wants me to be on his YouTube channel, which I agreed to do. And he said, you know, he's very candid. He's a very nice guy. He said, you know, I work for this organization. And their official position is that if the state allows one form of carry, they can ban another form of carry. But I have to say that this statement by the Ninth Circuit, a government may regulate the manner of carry only if it demonstrates that the regulation is identical or closely analogous to a firearm regulation broadly in effect when the Second or Fourteenth Amendment was ratified. So the CRPA's position is wrong. They cannot regulate the method of carry if they can't point to an analog, and they can't. There was none. Open carry, concealed carry, nobody cared. There was no such thing as a holster in those days. You stuck it in your pocket, you put it on a lanyard, you hung it around your neck, you jammed it in your belt, you buttoned up your coat when it got cold, even if the gun was inside your belt. There were no rules about how you carried your gun. Women typically carried them in their hand warmers. They were called muff guns. Guys had boot guns. They had belly guns. They had pocket pistols. They had long rifles. They carried them inside, outside, however the hell they had to carry them. And, in fact, in most states, it was the law that you possessed a weapon and you carried it, at least to militia training at a minimum.
Yeah, it's incredible how they bastardized and twisted, you know, meanings of these words and with the media complicit in running their narrative. But I think the narratives are starting to run weak and wane in their effect on the public.
I got to tell you, the state's case is a pretty weak sauce. I mean, really, when you listen to it, it is a fray, it's brandishing, it's tumultuous behavior, it's riot, it's inciting riot, it's drunk with a firearm, it's intent to murder, it's intent to assault. All of these things have criminal intent, which is absolutely lacking in the average person simply carrying a weapon for the purpose of self-defense and carrying the weapon peacefully with no ill intent toward anyone except those who would take their life, liberty, or property.
I think the criminals
cannot present one example.
I think the criminals have sort of migrated into a lot of high positions in government. I mean, there's a whole bunch of new stuff coming out that just broke over the weekend with Mike Johnson releasing 44,000 hours of the J6 tapes. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, there's some damning stuff in there. It was a setup. We're going to go over it a lot more in the next hour.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do a podcast, a special on that, I'm thinking tomorrow. But it's it just shows you and proves our point that this was not about hunting or self-defense out on the street. This was about a criminal government getting out of control and getting rid of all your rights. Now, before, when England was in charge, you know, the king, you know, made all the rules and it didn't matter. But even free Englishmen that went to the colonies realized at some point that if we keep going, we're going to be a subclass of citizens here, and it's slavery. So,
well, they literally did become a subclass of citizens, much the way we are now. You know, you buy what they say, you pay what they say you're going to pay, you do what they say, you do it when they say you can do it, how much you can do it. I mean, it's far worse now than it was in the colonies, and we have all the power. We've always had it.
Well, we got to start utilizing it.
Well, that's the thing, and that's what I'm doing, and I'm going to keep doing this, Mark, but here's something I got to say, and I hate talking about this stuff because I just hate it, but I got to talk about the money for a minute.
Yep.
You know, I'm 30,000 into the case so far this year and only 20,000 in the bank. So I need help with this. I can win this. Every indication is that we will have constitutional carry in California. Every legal, moral, and ethical indication to me says that I can win this case in spite of the NRA, in spite of CRPA, in spite of all of those who would pretend to protect your liberty but don't. We, the people, can enjoy constitutional liberty with the Second Amendment inside the state of California if I can afford to pay. And I'm already 10 grand in the hole right now.
So I want to let everybody know where they can send some money, and I'm going to pledge some money to you, Mark. I'm going to pledge $500 to get to you before the end of the year. I want to see
Thank
how
you.
Many people out there can match that. You know, we've pledged our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor, and I think we need to. This is one of the hills that we have to die on, because otherwise we're going to be dying on the hills. And so I think that the more people that figure out that we have to step up and protect these rights, the more chance that we are going to have of defeating this evil, which is exactly what it is. So they can send their donations to PECON and put in the memo 2A so we know where it goes. And that's at 14421 Old Oregon Trail, Suite B, 14421 Old Oregon Trail, Suite B, Redding, California, 96003. And if you want to get a hold of us, you can either call us at 530-221-0101 or send me an email at kentmark@msn.com. But again, you know, get those money, get that money, and we really need to support this because Mark has been doing, has been fighting the good fight now for what, 5-6 years on this issue, and we need to win this. We need to win this, and we need to take back our country from this scourge of government out of control.
The Constitution only gives one job to a citizen, just one. And there's only one job as a citizen that you can do, not based on the Declaration of Independence, but the Constitution itself.
We have
that job is to secure liberty to yourself and your posterity. So please help me do that.
Absolutely. We do have a caller. We can do a quick caller here from Andrew.
Okay.
I believe he's up there in Bernie. We've only got about a couple, 3 minutes, so make it quick, Andrew, if you can. Shut up. Go ahead and turn off your radio. Are you there?
You've done it.
Okay.
Yes, I have.
Okay, go ahead, Andrew.
Hey,
you're on.
What about edged weapons? Those are arms. So all these laws about lengths of blades and so forth are out the window, too, I would hope. Anyway, that's just a thought.
Well, I think this is just specific to the Second Amendment, which is with regards to firearms. So I think.
Well, arms. Arms are.
Well, you're right.
Yeah, I've had the same question, too.
What is the question? I couldn't hear it.
I think the question is, Mark, is that, you know, it says to keep and bear arms. Does this also cover not just, you know, firearms, but also knives and other types of weaponry that one could use in self-defense?
Well, yeah, I mean, the Second Amendment, the word arms is defined as any instrument capable of offensive or defensive use in the event of conflict with another person. And once again, that was defined by Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So, yes, it does. However, when you're talking about a firearms case in the Supreme Court in Bruin very distinctively said the state must point out a firearm regulation.
Right.
So the fight for unregulation of deregulation of knives and so on is a slightly different fight, but I agree with the caller. It's the same fight, really. And the government simply confuses the issue by separating the two categories.
Well, that's why they do the hair splitting, and that's why, you know, statues come from Rome and was from under the Justinian emperor, and they had to get so defined with their hair splitting because, you know, if they define one thing, it either excludes or doesn't pull in a bunch of other things, and now you end up fighting over all these little hair splits if you're not careful.
Well, and that's the funny thing, too.
That's exactly right, yeah.
When you end up looking at it, you look at the way that old muskets were made. They were made to be a club as soon as you ended up firing your first shot. And then following that, you normally had a dirk, or some guys would carry swords. And so, it in my opinion, at least, it encompasses all of it, especially because, like, right now, you're not allowed to carry a club. You're not allowed to carry any of that. Well, that would also be the same weapon, generally.
Well, we know Ruth Bader Ginsburg couldn't have been wrong.
She
absolutely
was the,
not. I mean, you know, she was the god of the liberal, and she defined arms, and she defined bearing arms.
I'm so truly grateful for her, because without her being in there and holding that position open until Hillary got in there, we would not have had the justice we have that overturned Roe. So
let's let our caller. Is our caller still on the line? Must not be. Go ahead, Mark.
Justice delayed is justice denied, and that's what we're trying to prevent. Now we have this under submission. Our job now is to find a way to force the issue into the light of day, and that's what we're going to try to do next.
Again, we need to get those checks sent to Pecan, P-E-C-A-N, just like the nut. That's Pecan at 14421 Old Oregon Trail, Suite B, Redding, California, 96003. Put 2A in the memo so we make sure it goes to the right place to support Mark and his effort to win the day in this fight, which is something that we have to win because the Second Amendment protects all the other amendments.
Amen. God bless you guys, and thanks for the work you're doing.
Very good. Thanks, Mark. We appreciate you as well.
Thank you, Mark.
All right, see
you. You bet. All right, so we're almost to the break here. I think we are at the break. We got 1 minute. So this the second half of the hour, we're going to cover this J6. We got several things to cover. J6. I also want to touch on the $3 trillion that they audited the Pentagon and they can't seem to find it. Just missing over $3 trillion. I think it's $3.8 trillion. So there's a bunch of stuff that we can dig into in the next hour. But this J6 thing is going to blow up big time because now we have enough evidence to show that this was not an insurrection. This was a crowd that was agitated by the Capitol Police and or the FBI or both.
The interest is up and the stock market down. And
the news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Michael Herring. Some good news from Gaza. The fragile ceasefire holding between Israel and Hamas and the terrorist group has set free 17 of its hostages today. 14 of them were Israelis. One of them is an American. President Biden says 4-year-old American hostage Abigail Edan has been released by Hamas. She is free and she is in Israel, the president says. He also reminds us that her parents were murdered in front of her by Hamas in the October 7th attack. The nation's major shipping companies say they will have capacity to meet projected demand this Christmas season.
Carriers like the U.S. Postal Service, FedEx, and UPS are ready for the onslaught of packages. UPS is hiring some 100,000 people to meet the peak, while the U.S. Postal Service has added 10,000 seasonal workers and installed about 150 package sorting machines since last year. According to ShipMatrix, the parcel industry has a capacity of delivering more than 110 million parcels, compared to a projected holiday peak of 82 million per day. Greg Clugston reporting.
A judge strikes down an effort to enshrine abortion in Nevada's constitution.
Carson City District Court Judge James Russell has ruled that a proposed ballot initiative is too broad. The petition would have amended the state constitution to include the fundamental right to abortion, childbirth, postpartum care, birth control, vasectomy, and tubal ligation. The judge found that the amendment was a clear violation of Nevada's single subject rule. Pro-abortion groups are considering their options and may make an appeal to the Nevada Supreme Court. Tayshia Stevens reporting.
German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has promised quick action to fix a budget crisis after a court decision blew a hole in the almost-finished plan for next year. It also threatens to disrupt all kinds of spending. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The government is spying on you. No surprise, I know, but did you know the banks are helping them? And did you know that withdrawing your cash from the bank can be very risky? That's right. Let Swiss America educate you about this. Banks are now required to spy on us for the government, and they report any behavior they think is suspicious. You'll be shocked when you read The Secret War on Cash from Swiss America. This new war against cash is really a war against the Constitution, against all freedom-loving Americans. You must read The Secret War on Cash. Get your free copy by calling or texting 800-266-6082. That's 800-266-6082. This war on cash is growing daily, and it also includes all forms of digital money. So please, get and read The Secret War on Cash free by calling or texting right now at 800-266-6082. That's 800-266-6082. Message and data rates may apply.
Honda is recalling certain Accord and HR-V vehicles due to a problem with the seatbelts.
According to notices published by Honda and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration earlier this week, more than 300,000 Accord and HR-V vehicles from year 2023 and 2024 may have defects. The front seatbelt pretensioners, which tighten seatbelts in place upon impact, may be missing the rivet that secures the quick connector and wire plate. Regulators say this means that passengers may not be properly restrained in a crash. NHTSA credited the issue to an error made during assembly. No reports of injuries or deaths related to the faulty pretensioners have been filed. I'm Tiffany Wong.
Attackers have seized a tanker linked to an Israeli official off the coast of Aden, Yemen. That's according to statements today from the ship's managers and a private intelligence firm. This is townhall.com. Don't look now, but we've got a new book from an old Beatle.
Ringo Starr's latest project is for fans of music and fashion. Beats and Threads is an illustrated journey through the former Beatles drummer's long career, featuring images of everything from his drum kits to his wardrobe. The book is 312 pages long. It has a list price of $80, signed editions for as much as $750. All proceeds will be donated to charity. Jason Walker reporting.
Today is Sunday, November the 26th, and some notable people are celebrating a birthday today, including impressionist Rich Little, the man of so many faces and so many voices, is 85 years old today. Contemporary Christian musicians Anthony and Randy Armstrong of Red are 45. MLB All-Star Matt Carpenter, 38. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Stories about me. Some good and some bad. I fought in three wars, and I even made it back. I put food on the table through harsh winter cold. I even helped a miner protect his hard-earned gold. I've been hanging over warm-lit fire. I've been abandoned, left out in the cold. I have killed for money and desire. I've been bought, stolen, and sold.
From the Free Fire Media Community Radio for the North State, your talk radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. Yeah, we're back, and boy, I'll tell you what, there's going to be some things blowing up this week in light of all the stuff that came out over the week, and the Speaker of the House let go 44,000 hours of videos from the J6 that they were withholding. The so-called January 6th subcommittee that, you know, had the couple of token rhinos on there, you know, so this complete sham, a complete railroad, a complete setup. And now we've got video showing that they provoked the crowd, that they were throwing percussion grenades into the crowd. They were shooting them with rubber bullets when they weren't doing anything, and they agitated them to the point that they got out of control. Because you know something? I don't know if you've ever had a percussion grenade go off around you. It's not a pleasant thing. And so,
you know, and also at close distances, those percussion grenades can kill. They're considered less lethal. And also, in the video, you see the very first guy that gets shot, he doesn't appear to be doing anything. They shot him in the head with these rubber bullets.
With a rubber bullet, it actually shot a hole through his cheek, and you can see the rubber bullet still lodged in his cheek.
And those will kill you. If it had been 3 inches higher, that would have been a murder.
Well, isn't that interesting? The only ones that got killed that day were one person, Ashley Babbitt, and I saw, you know, show after show on the news, and you still hear it from people. Well, yeah, they killed cops. No, they didn't. Not one cop died on January 6th. The propaganda, the narrative, the whole thing has just been complete BS. And now you're starting to see the evidence because they can't cover it up any longer. And this is all due to Mike Johnson releasing these tapes. And because Mike Gates, Matt Gates got rid of Kevin McCarthy, who in my mind is an absolute piece of crap. Rhino, you know, one of the promises for him to get the speakership was to release the tapes. Now, right, wrong, or not, whether you like Matt Gaetz or not, if he wouldn't have gotten Mike Johnson in there, that could have been a really bad move. But it worked out. I don't know. Maybe he's a genius. Maybe he's not. But now you got somebody in there who releases the tapes immediately, and all of a sudden you've got a completely different narrative. Now, so McCarthy, what is he, running both sides of the train there? Yeah, I think so. So now, I've got the release. It's from the Committee on House Administration, the Chairman Brian Steele, and I'm gonna post this on Facebook, and you guys can look at some of it yourself. And that's all 44,000. That's the CHA subcommittee reading room. And then also, I've got the, I've posted some other stuff. The first one I can't run. So we're going to do a podcast tomorrow, on this whole thing and run all the stuff that we can't run here on the radio because there's a lot of swearing. You know, when you start throwing percussion, grenades into a crowd, it really ticks people off and they start, flipping the bird and yelling things that you probably can't play on the radio.
Well, and it's tear gas. It's percussion grenades.
Well, they did both.
Bullets.
They did both. In fact, at one point in the thing, they're chanting, "We can't breathe," because of all the tear gas. So it completely – now, the police doing this, that is a complete violation of their civil rights. That's a complete violation of the law. They're the ones that started the riot. Because you know something? If if you're down in the crowd and all of a sudden people start lobbing percussion grenades and tear gas into the crowd and you haven't done anything and they start shooting you with rubber bullets, yeah, it's going to kind of rile you up. And this was a complete setup. And who gave the order? Who gave the order to let those guys start firing in the crowd? Who gave the order to let those guys start lobbing these grenades into the crowd? Who was behind all this? Well, we've already got an investigation being called for by Marjorie Taylor Greene up there. Let's start a new subcommittee. Let's go after the guys that broke the... These guys are the criminals. We've been saying... We knew it all along. But now we've got the evidence to prove that these guys are criminals. And this was a complete setup. And this was all about changing the election. So I don't care how you slice the pie on the cheating of the election. They stopped them from examining the electors on the same exact day and time that this was supposed to happen. They start a riot out there?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And so I don't care how you slice the pie, the laptop. We know that the FBI had informants. We've got guys with pictures now flashing their badges out there with MAGA hats on. They've released all of the body cams. So now it's just a matter of looking through it, and then they've got them prior to this, and I haven't gone over the full timeline because this is a lot of stuff to digest.
It's a lot of hours. It's what we've been asking for this entire time, but from what we can see as far as when things kicked off, it totally looks like it was propagated.
Oh, a total setup.
And when you look also, so TimCast has an article from November 16th here, 2023. A U.S. congressman presented photos of buses he alleges were used by the FBI to transport undercover agents to the Capitol riot on January 6th, 2021. During a House Homeland Security Committee hearing yesterday, Representative Clay Hitchens, Republican, confronted FBI Director Christopher Wray over the presence of undercover agents at the protest, a topic Wray has sidestepped in the past. They had all kinds of these buses there that were filled up with
all these
called
them the ghost buses. They were there. Some of them were filled up with Antifa. You got FBI here. You got 20, 30, who knows how many sources. We've already had Wray up on Christopher Wray, the head of the FBI up on Capitol Hill, testifying that, and he couldn't reveal how many people sources were in the crowd because that would be, revealing sources and means and all that crap, which you know is complete baloney, so that he can cover his butt because this is all starting to blow up on him now that this film's been released. They're not gonna. So we'll see how this goes. I mean, I don't trust the Republicans any more than I do the Democrats. It's like having the two Republicans on the J6 committee. Oh yeah, Liz Cheney and what's his zinger finger or whatever.
Well, and that's my problem, too, with Mike Johnson. So Mike Johnson just got in there, but you look at this. Yes, I appreciate the fact he released these videos. However, I don't appreciate the fact he basically gave the Democrats the wish list to avoid the shutdown that McCarthy would have given them in the first place.
Maybe so, but, you know, there's you can't fix the ship all at once. And I'm not defending any of them because I don't like the Republicans anymore. I think these are all politicians. You got to hold them all accountable, period, bar none. But at the same time, you got to take this a bite at a time. You can't swallow an elephant whole. And we have got a huge freaking elephant sitting down on our back right now. And so if you just try to right the ship all at once, you're going to turn it over. You're going to capsize it. So, and that might even be in the works anyway, and it's no way to avoid it. So just the fact that he released this and a promise made, a promise kept, gives me hope that there's some people up there that are actually trying to do the right thing. I guess we have a caller on the line, Mr. Raposa, I'm assuming.
How you doing, brother?
The fun never freaking stops, buddy.
You know, I love your show. I love what you're doing here, and you're 100% right. You know, the thing that really bothers me, and you hit the nail on the head. Doggone it, Sean Hannity, shut the hell up. You know, it isn't the rank and file of the FBI and the rank and file. It wasn't the upper echelon. It was the rank and file that wore the MAGA hats. It's the rank and file that goes through there. It's the rank and file of these police officers that are shooting innocent people. It's the rank and file. And you guys in the rank and file, you all should be ashamed of yourselves. You should be totally ashamed of yourselves, and you should quit your job. Just quit it. And go someplace where if you want to do law and order, not there. But taking orders for doing things that are completely corrupt against your oath of office, against the law, entrapping people, shooting people, seriously. I mean, seriously. I am so sick of these guys. Well, it's not the guy in the field. Like hell it's not. It is the guy in the field.
Yep.
Sorry.
Oh, absolutely. It's like, so, you know, when you look at this footage, the first footage I watched was they got a bunch of them being led by the Capitol Police through the Capitol, and they're all videoing everything. It looks like a sightseeing tour off a bus that just got checked in from travel agency or something. And so they're walking through the Capitol, and I think their music is like the sound of, the girl from Epony. Dun, 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 dun. You know, they're all holding hands and taking pictures, and they're fist bumping the cops, and then all of a sudden, after that, they're out in the corridor, and then all of a sudden they're getting shot with rubber bullets and percussion grenades. Like there's nothing going on here. This thing is a complete frickin' setup, and everybody can see it now.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And you know, the thing that goes back to the if you haven't seen it, folks, if you haven't seen Police State yet by Dinesh D'Souza and Dan Bongino, you need to go see that movie. That movie is so eye-opening, and it talks about the rank and file. And Bongino was the first guy, at least in the major media market, that mentioned the fact that it's the guys that are in the rank and file that need to be blamed. They're following orders that are corrupt. What are you, SS troops? So if you're SS troops and you're murdering people or you're harming people, that's okay because someone told you to do it. It's okay to harm innocent people. They should be ashamed of themselves. And no wonder people have some of the feelings they have toward law enforcement. No wonder. I mean, some of them are justified because of things like this. So the good cops and the good law enforcement people are the people who shouldn't be following orders like this, shouldn't be doing these types of things. And I'll just leave it there, but it just pisses me off to no end. I'm so sick of it. No wonder that, no wonder we have militias.
Well,
I'm just telling you.
Yeah, gee, these guys aren't out of control. The FBI's not out of control. I mean, how many psyops do they got to run on us before you go, well, there's a problem down there at the FBI building. They're hiding stuff from us. They're using stuff. They're instigating riots. They're fixing elections. At what point in time do you go, hey, I think there's a problem here. Oh, but we should just follow orders from Gavin Newsom down there on elections and everything, because this is all for our own good. The whip cracks, and it's get back to work, peon, and shut up.
You know, I'm just so tired of mindless law enforcement officers that follow this horrible, horrible, horrible example. This horrible example of these people. And there's so many good police officers and so many good people in law enforcement. You guys need to stand up. You guys need to, just like they did in New York when they had that corrupt police captain. Or that corrupt police chief, and they turn their back on him. I mean, that's what you guys got to do. You guys need to start standing up, because sooner or later, lines are going to be drawn.
Well,
those lines are drawn. You're going to be on one side or the other.
They're being drawn.
Ben Franklin said.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Terry.
Well, they like Ben Franklin during the Revolutionary War. Most fences were picket fences. Almost all of them were picket fences, and Franklin said, "A fence sitter eventually ends up being impaled." And I think that we have to be looking at things now and understanding if you're in law enforcement, hey, God bless you, but don't you become one of those corrupt pieces of crap that are following orders as a minion because you want to protect your pension. That is just, it's disgusting. It is absolutely irrevocably disgusting.
Yeah, and thank you, Terry. And defending any of this stuff is unbelievable. That anybody defends this, oh yeah, it's not so bad. The government at work, and you got to follow the rules from coming out of Sacramento and Washington. Yeah, even if the guy's getting paid off from China, even if he's left the borders open so that we have an invasion, even if they cheat in elections, even if they fire on their own citizens, even if they try to take away all their rights, you couldn't even, if you were planning this, this is exactly what you would do to take over this country.
You're right. And people, you need to go see Police State. I think you can get it online now for free, I think.
I actually saw it on Paramount. I think you can see it on Paramount Plus.
If you haven't seen it, see it. I mean, when you stop and think about a rank and file FBI agent, 6'5", dragging a 13-year-old girl down steps, that's okay? How is that okay? And then they released her mom a little while after. I mean, how is any of that okay?
Well, we
have to get a grip as the American people. This is crunch time. It's now crunch time. As a citizen, you should be done with this crap. And I would use a lot stronger word if I could on, in fact, maybe we ought to do this on a podcast.
Well, Mark, I think we are.
I might just join you, my friend.
I'll give you a call later.
Anyway, I love you guys. Thank you for what you're doing, Mark. Another great program, and thank you two, for bringing the information to us that we can't get on mainstream media. Thank you for that.
Well, that's what's turning the tide, Terry. It really is. That's the fact that the narrative is falling apart around these people because there's so many other outlets now. Does anybody actually watch CNN anymore? Does anybody go to Rachel Maddow for the news to get told
probably,
the truth?
Probably a lot of people, but you know, just like the rank and file people. Anyway, I'm going to let you guys go. I love you guys. Thank you so much again. And, you know, hey, time has come for 51, man.
Thanks,
I'm telling you.
You betcha. I guess we could ask the question, does anybody still go to the Mental State Hospital for a frontal lobotomy? Yeah, there's a few. But, you know, not the preferred method of mental health, treatment.
Well, I'm seeing this, too, now. I'm seeing how corrupt that day was. It really makes me question those four officers that committed suicide in the days following.
Well, you know how many people committed suicide that got locked up on the J6 protesters? There's about six or seven or eight, I don't remember the number, that have been so persecuted by their government for doing absolutely nothing. They committed suicide because they had the full force of this whole, monster coming down on them through the courts. Not allowing them due process, waiving all their rights. They used the Patriot Act, which we knew that they would, to classify them as terrorists, to get rid of all their rights, lock them away without trial. I mean, at what point in time do you go, hey, well, wait a minute, this is a problem, because what they can use against one segment of the population, they can use against the whole population, and anybody out there who doesn't think that they're going to be on the wrong side of this at some point is an absolute moron.
Well, and you look at the 17 years that Enrique Tarrio got, even though he wasn't even present at January 6th, and the fact that the only thing they even had him saying was don't leave after they ended up doing it. So he had a text message that they vaguely tried to end up implying that, oh, hey, he basically is orchestrating and leading this thing, when that wasn't the case. And it appears from everybody's testimony that wasn't the case. So you've got a guy now facing 17 years. That's more than what most child rapists get. That's more than what people who are gun trafficking and drug dealing or anything of that nature get. And you look at what's taking place at these videos, and it looks like they incited the crowd. It looks like they committed violence.
I think it actually completely shows that they did incite it. I mean, and now you're going to start seeing, you know, the heat's going to start getting turned up on these guys because, you know, the truth is starting to work its way to the surface. And let me tell you, it doesn't bode well for Liz Cheney, Nancy Pelosi, and the rest of the fake media either, because who's been holding up the narrative? Have they done any investigative reporting? Or is this all a Democratic, the media's an arm of the Democratic Party, or the globalist elite, the climate change czars, whatever you want to call it? So now, you know, we've got this footage showing police officers starting to fire on unsuspecting crowd without warning. They didn't say disperse. They didn't say to go home. They didn't say anything. They just start firing on these guys.
Well, and by the way, too, so the area you can watch Police State on, it's called Salem Now. So salemnow.com, SalemNow.com, and it's about $6.99. You've got all kinds of movies on there that you can watch. You can watch Police State. You can watch Nefarious. You can watch a bunch of all of the media that they won't want you to see. They won't let you have on Amazon, so support it.
Well, there you go. So, you know, it's just getting crazier and crazier. But, you know, you got cops in the crowd flashing their badge on camera now with, you know, because they released all the body cams. So, you know, the guy's got a face mask on with a MAGA hat and flashing a badge. Gee, that's not an undercover cop, is it? That's not an FBI agent. That's not somebody saying, hey, look, I'm one of you guys. Leave me alone.
What I specifically notice, and I have, let's say, I've probably got maybe 8 or 9 Trump hats at home. None of them are new looking. None of them are really that great. And they weren't even back in 2020. It just so happened that the people that seemed to support and wear those hats wore those hats. Those were the hats they were wearing around. So it's very interesting to me how many of the people that were causing problems had brand spanking new flags. And you can still see the creases in the flags, and you can still see the hats. They're bright, shiny red, not a spot on them. I think I even saw a tag on one.
Now, when you see all of these, and you make your – you guys look at this stuff for yourself. Look at this stuff. You watch the footage. You look at the cameras. You see what they've got going on there. You look at the evidence from the other side that was all blocked, by the way, by the January 6th committee that – you know, and – if you're in a fair trial and the other side is hiding exculpatory evidence, that's a freaking crime, okay? And so what all this leads to is, in my opinion, is one thing. There was no insurrection. Oh, it's worse than Pearl Harbor. It's worse than 9/11. Yeah, a bunch of peaceful guys went up there, walked through the Capitol. They didn't have any guns. They had no weapons. They didn't storm anything. They got down in the courtyard, and they got started getting fired up with percussion grenades and rubber bullets. And those are the bad guys. Are you kidding me? There was no insurrection. Go look at the footage. Make your own judgment. But I'll tell you what. The lies and deceit are beyond the pale here. And these people need to go to freaking prison. They need to go to jail. They need to be... Oh, man, I'll tell you what. Let's go to a break before I start using four-letter bombs myself.
As long as anyone can remember, Historic Haas Farms has been the place for the holiday season. Memories that date back to early childhood, filled with wonderful food, music, and friendship. A place where everyone is welcome. In that tradition, Historic Haas Farms has a special treat, Lights on the Farm. A one-mile journey filled with wondrous lights and music. A country odyssey. To make this journey, you'll ride out in country-covered wagons or take the Mighty Haas Express. Sit back and view the seemingly never-ending waves of shimmering lights. Brightly designed by one of our own, award-winning Michelle Van Gant of Redding Lights. So reserve your ticket to ride today. Times and dates are limited, and every Thursday, children 12 and under are free. So don't delay. Order your tickets online at historichaasfarms.com, because Christmas lights do more than just glow. They're about love given a long time ago.
Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year, we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media and find our links on our website, havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday mashup, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
This holiday season, join the all-new tradition of lights and festivities for the entire family at Redding Garden of Lights.
taking place November 17th through January 7th at Turtle Bay's McConnell Botanical Gardens.
At the Sundial Bridge in Redding, California.
Explore over 10 acres of outdoor illuminated gardens featuring over 1 million lights, plus holiday-themed food, drinks, music, and so much more.
Redding Garden of Lights, presented by Mercy Medical Center, Redding.
Learn more at turtlebay.org.
There. I love that song, by the way, just in case you want to know. Ah, wow. I'll tell you what, it's hard not to get a little emotional in here sometimes because I think, I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I've had about enough of this crap, okay? But, you know, we have our fearless leader in charge of everything, so we're safe. And so let's, here's a little clip. Are we ready to go in there? Let's hear from our fearless leader here.
Absolutely, let's go.
Oh, hold on, I got to stop it there because what I got no sound yet here. Is it me or is it you? I think it's you.
I think I'm turned up here. So
let's try it one more time here. Unmute, got it. I'm going to put it back right there. Let's see. No, we got no sound.
Okay, well, I will work on that, and I'll let you play that here in a second.
All right, let me know when you're ready, because okay. It's ready to go.
All right.
I'm not sure why we got no sound.
Okay, all right.
Well, that was an anticlimactic thing.
So while we get that going, I want to kind of discuss what's going on between Pakistan and kind of give a throwback to that 2020 time frame. So we've now seen both election years and both years leading up to it, what's known as a color revolution. So there is, and I just typed this into ChatGPT, as what are the hallmarks and signs of a color revolution? And I got 8 things back here. So mass protests, color revolutions often includes large-scale, sustained protests that attract a diverse range of participants. Use of symbolic colors. The term color revolution itself comes from a common use of specific colors and symbols for the movements. For example, the Rose Revolution of Georgia, the Orange Revolution in Ukraine, and the Red Velvet Revolution in Czechoslovakia. And those colors are often used to represent the movement's goals and ideals. Now, I happen to remember a fist in 2020 that just seemed to really represent a lot of people's ideals in like a black box people were putting around their profile and stuff. And then following that, there was a yellow and blue little flag that everybody was using here recently. And then now we have a bunch of green flags and a bunch of stars and things like that that are on it. And it just seems way, way too convenient that all of these happen to happen in election year. Like, why is that always the case?
I don't know. Things like it's a color too far on the bridge for me. I don't know. I'm not sure what to say about that.
Here's 3 through 8, youth participation. It just so happens that the TikTok algorithm really, really seems to be pushing this Pakistani thing really hard on there. And you've got nonviolent resistance, which, you can say arguably may or may not be the case in a lot of these, media influence and international support, demand for democratic reforms, and elite fragmentation. Huh. Hmm. Does that sound like we're in a color revolution again?
The only question I have is if Iran attacks Turkey from the rear, how come it's not a goose? I don't know. I don't know about the color revolution. I think there's some validity to what you're saying. I haven't had enough time to really dive into it to have anything intelligence to say other than joke about it. But, you know, some of this stuff is not funny. And
this is one of those things. So you might remember back prior to the 2020 election, I was actually saying I think it's going to be a contested election. I think they were going to take it. And I was saying this 8 months beforehand. But the reason why I was saying it was because you had John Podesta was playing President Biden, and you had a whole bunch of nonpartisan people that were playing all of these operations to figure out if they were going to have California secede from the Union in case Donald Trump win.
I think you meant secede.
But at that point in time, they had basically come to the determination that there was no way forwards but a President Biden victory. Anything other than that, it was going to result in all these states seceding from the Union. They were not going to be there anymore. They were not going to be part of the Union. And there was going to be color revolutions, in their own words, that they were going to be starting and doing in the United States. And lo and behold, just a couple months later, you started seeing the George Floyd incident take place.
Well, there is something to that. That was a big deal, and that seems to be coming out that's exonerating. What's his name? And he's going to look about retrying the case. Was it Devin or
Chauvin?
Derek Chauvin.
Derek Chauvin. Yeah, thank you. They're going to retry the case because it came out just more than a couple weeks ago or whatever it was. Is that they didn't look at the coroner's report that said he died of fentanyl.
Well, and that was something we had talked about on the show. We had people call in and say, oh, that's not true, and we ended up pulling up the documentation.
And one of the things about fentanyl is that you can't breathe. And, you know, you can't hang it all on that. I'm not saying that the police guy was entirely, right about everything, but you can't hang a murder charge on the guy for using police procedure that was in the book saying that it's okay to put, pressure on their neck either through with your arm or your knee or whatever to keep the guy under control. Who knew that the guy was so loaded up on fentanyl? And that should have been brought into the case. Again, exculpatory evidence that was left out of the case, and by the coroner's own admission, he didn't want to do it because he was afraid of all the repercussions from the political aspect of it.
Well, and therein lies the problem with it. Can you have a fair trial in a system that you've got people waiting outside to kill you anyway if you are considered innocent? And I would argue no.
Well, that's mob rule.
The coroner's report also ended up indicating there was no area that would have caused suffocation from that knee on the back.
Exactly.
And that was what he ended up saying there.
And the guy's languishing in prison on a charge that really doesn't hold water when you understand the whole aspects of the case. But it was politically expedient for their narrative.
And it's not just him. You had the other officers that were there. He lost his wife over the deal, and a lot of that, I think, probably was the stress of going after.
Have you looked at the officers? Two of them are of color and two of them are white. And the ones that had all the problem were the white guys, and the other guys just kind of got handed a pass.
No, the Asian guy did also end up going to jail for it, too.
For how long?
I don't know. I think he was also convicted of involuntary manslaughter.
Well, okay, so you got a case for involuntary manslaughter there with the knee and everything possibly, but not murder.
I don't see it even there.
I don't either. I think that neither one of them should have been convicted of it. They were just doing their job, and this guy was out of control. He just robbed a convenience store. He's loaded up on fentanyl and about three or four other drugs.
But it was good
for the narrative.
According to the coroner's report, it was 3 to 4 times the lethal dose of
fentanyl.
That's what I'm saying. There's not a little bit pregnant. You're either at the lethal dose of fentanyl, or you're not.
So
and
you
if you're 3 to 4 times, you just killed yourself.
But they just hung it on a police officer because he was conveniently, from the perspective of the camera, they were able to frame the narrative, kind of like the J6 thing, where they frame the narrative, but they lie about the truth while they're framing the narrative.
Well, and this is my problem when I look at what's taking place with this Palestine thing. You've got these universities that are now flying the Palestinian flag. You've got all these people that are once again tearing down our monuments and putting up Palestinian flags.
Here's my problem.
Color revolution.
Here's my problem with this. Okay. You can be on the side of the Hamas or Gaza. There is no Palestine, by the way. There's Palestinians, but there is no Palestine. But you can be on the side of Hamas if you want, and you can be the side of Israel if you want. But why are we funding both sides? Why are we funding Iran, who's giving the money to Hamas, and why are we giving money to Israel? If you got any common sense at all, pick a side or don't pick a side at all. But you don't sit there and feed both sides of a conflict so it turns into World War III, because that's the smart thing to do when you're the commander in chief. Yeah, that's a problem. So, are we fixed yet? All right, let's try this. Here's our commander-in-chief, the guy that's in charge of the free world, and he's just got good grief, he's sharp as a tack.
How embarrassing.
Some of them have also raised their concerns directly with China.
The never, ever, 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 ever list.
Our exports of lifted components.
Our exports of lifted components. And
that don't make no sense.
The Chinese balloon's payload off the ocean floor.
God, he has a rotten brain.
What kind of example is that?
But the events of the past few years have proven beyond a doubt that America's security.
Huh?
What an idiot.
Should never be held hostage to events overseas.
You're not just wrong, you're stupid.
Not a pandemic, not a war, not the politics of ambition.
You suck. Yeah, jackass.
Not the politics of ambition.
Oh, look at me. I'm shaking in my little space boots.
Now, obviously that was supposed to be funny. I'm not sure it was. But the truth is, the guy has got dementia. He's got something wrong. He's either on drugs or he's getting juiced or he's just getting old. The guy's in his 80s. And this guy funding both sides of the war and all these other controversial things that he's done. I mean, why would you open your borders? Why would you fund both sides of a war? Why would you send billions and billions and billions of dollars to Ukraine when we're starving at home and there's people in the streets and they're homeless everywhere? You're like Gavin Newsom. You can go down to San Francisco, clean it all up in a couple of days. Although it's been like a potty training session for, you know, homeless people down there all over Market Street and Union Square. All of the shops are leaving. There's hardly anything down at Union. There's nothing left on Union Square. All of the big box stores gone. Market Street. So they cleaned it all up in one day. And Gavin Newsom has the cojones to say, yeah, did we clean this up for the Chinese and the important people coming to visit? Is it true? Yeah, it's true. You can watch the clip. Mm-hmm. It's like, talk about putting the big middle finger in your face and going, what are you going to do about it? Like, they don't give a crap. And this guy's whole life is about becoming our next president?
Like I said at the beginning of the show, when your president comes to town, you'll clean it up.
Well, there you go.
And
Zhao Ji.
When you end up looking at it, it also was that governor that also ended up having a bunch of backdoor deals with China for a bunch of the vaccinations and a bunch of the masks and a bunch of the stuff like that was coming through. Just so happened to make a whole bunch of money on that deal with companies that he was related to.
Yeah, what could go wrong? So that brings me around. I want to talk about this story. This is actually off the United States Attorney General's office, Eastern District of California. Operator of a Central California biolab indicted for distributing adulterated misbrand COVID-19 tests and lying to authorities. Now, we reported on this in July. We did a podcast on it. And now we've got a federal grand jury returned a 3-count indictment today of, I don't know how to say, Xi Beiju.
President Xi.
No, this is not. Oh. This is not the president of China. This is the guys that were running the lab. This is
gotcha.
Xi Beiju, a.k.a. Jesse Zhu. There's a joke. Kwai He and David He. Okay. A citizen of China who formerly resided in Clovis charged him with distributing adulterated and misbranded medical devices in violation of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. And for making false statements to the Food and Drug Administration. And so we've got a Chinese lab down there with mice all over, and they're injecting the mice and putting formulated COVID viruses so that they can spread it. And I wonder how many of these or what happens if you just open the border and you let all these guys in? I mean, gee, nothing could go wrong, right? They couldn't be setting up a thing to where we would have, oh, I don't know, some kind of a pandemic or something that you'd have to get, you know, vaccines from a Pfizer who now is being sued for, having viruses, or not viruses, but vaccines that kill people. Gee, what could go wrong with no, oh, gee, and under the Emergency Authorization Act, they have no culpability. But, you know, when you find out you've lied to the public, that kind of waves off your immunity a little bit for negligence, so they can still be sued. But I digress. Let's go back. According to the court documents, between January 2020 and March 2023, through the companies Universal Medical Tech and Incorporated, UMI, UMI, and Prestige Biotech Corporation, PBI, Zhu sold hundreds of thousands of COVID-19 test kits to companies throughout the United States and were based in Fresno and Reedley and did not obtain pre-market approval, pre-market clearance, I guess they just thought they were Pfizer, emergency use authorization, and other applicable exemptions from the FDA that, as was required. UMI and PBI received millions of dollars for the sale of the test kits. You know, and this is all brought to the forefront now by Kevin Kiley, who I'm not super keen on at this point after the vote for Kevin McCarthy and a few other things, but I'll give him a credit where credit is due here. You know, bringing this thing up, because this shouldn't just go by the wayside, because don't you think it's kind of a problem when you got Chinese nationals in California, you know, setting up labs with no authorization, sending out, COVID test kits that could be infecting you all across the board, so that you're getting a false reading on how much is actually spreading through the public?
Well, it's pretty interesting, too, because I remember we did a report last year on L.A. Sheriff's Department that said we would not continue doing the COVID testing procedures because we just so happened to have our DNA being sent back to China. So that was kind of interesting. And then you also had a bunch of other big government agencies.
Well, there was no guy like named Fauci that was in collusion with the Wuhan lab. Creating the virus, gain of function, making it because they took it out of the United States because it was illegal at that point, and then funding it through an NGO so that they could create the virus that all of a sudden got introduced, meanwhile holding stock in Pfizer with Bill Gates.
So you also have these tests that are right there that are in this lab. And it reminds me, let's go back to 2010 for a war on biological dominance from Zhou Zhuai, a professor at the Third Military Medical University, emphasizes the impact on biology on future warfare. And then in 2015, the president of the Academy of Medical Sciences, He Fuchu, then the president of the Academy of Military Sciences, argued that biotechnology will become the new strategic commanding heights of national defense. From biomaterials to brain control weapons, Ma Jin, he said, it has become the vice president of the Academy of Military Sciences. So they've for a very long time had a structure set up to do mind control type stuff and also to do all kinds of biological warfare using your specific DNA. It just so happens all of those tests just ended up giving him all of your DNA. Good job.
They wouldn't do that. So questioned by FDA officials, I'm not sure if I trust the guys who are questioning them. Remember, you know, the Food and Drug Administration works for the government that, you know, kind of helped Pfizer out here. I don't know. He made several false statements, including his name that was Quang David He. Try to say that five times fast. He was hired by UMI as a COVID-19 consultant in 2021. He was hired by PBI. I was going to say PB&J, but I think it's PBI. Just a couple of weeks prior to meeting with the FDA to communicate with government agencies on PBI's behalf. And he did not know anything about manufacturing or distributing histories for either one of the companies. So let's see. You got a Chinese national coming over here, hired as a consultant for these companies as a COVID-19 consultant. But he has no manufacturing or distributing experience for the companies that he's representing with the FDA.
They also found out there was Ebola in that lab, too. But yeah. The CDC just didn't want to test it. It said Ebola. They didn't test it, though, because for some reason they didn't want to know if the lab actually contained Ebola in it. So they just destroyed it. But it said Ebola.
You know, this case is a product of an investigation by the FDA Office of Criminal Investigations and Assistance from the Federal Bureau of Investigation. That would be the FBI and the California Department of Public Health, Food, and Drug Branch. Assistant U.S. Attorney Joseph D. Barton and Arliss Clemente and Henry Z. Karbajov III are prosecuting this case. Now, I trust every one of those guys because they work for the FBI and the FDA and the California Department of Health.
So this, by the way, from September of this year, China has announced plans to become the world's leader in biotechnology by 2035. It regards genetic information, sometimes called the new gold, as a critical ingredient in scientific revolution that could produce thousands of new drugs and cures. It wins the technology race. China stands to gain significant economic and strategic leverage against its chief rival, the United States.
Okay, let's go back here. If convicted, Zhu, not you, Zhu, faces a maximum statutory penalty. This is a maximum penalty of 3 years.
Oh, no.
And a $250,000 fine for the adulterated and misbranding of a medical device, and 5 years in prison and $250,000 fine for false statements.
Wow.
That's it. Boy, I guess, you know, that wouldn't cause a nationwide thing, would it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you out in good behavior, and the Chinese government pays your fine. You know, you're out in 6 months.
Well, and this is the other thing. You end up looking at our border right now. Just as of this year, we already have about 190 apprehensions of people that are on the U.S. terrorist watch list. Once again, you go back to one of the stories that we covered about, I think it was 2020-ish, there was a sheriff and there was also several people from Homeland Security and from Border Patrol. They all said the same thing. If we catch one, four got across. So by that logic, you have close to about 800 terrorists right now that are in our country. You also have a whole bunch of people that are coming over from countries that are not friendly to us, such as Russia and China and Iran and Pakistan and Serbia and a bunch of these other places that don't particularly like us. But in particular for China, it's interesting because they ended up passing regulations that it doesn't matter where you are in the world, you have to help China and report on anything that's going on. So anybody who's here that's from China and is a Chinese national will have to end up reporting to China or be at risk of execution for treason. That's pretty not okay.
I just in from the chat room. I guess the Board of Supervisors meeting was canceled on Tuesday because of the holidays. Interesting. I didn't know that. I just got that in. And then I'm not sure about the other thing you're talking about with the meeting agenda with Lori there. So if you want to call in and explain that, that's fine. We got about 9 minutes left. I do want to cover the audit of the Pentagon, and they're just – it's like they failed the sixth audit in a row. Who knew? I mean, the Pentagon just failed its sixth straight audit. And trillions of dollars are missing. Wow, that's a shocker, isn't it? You know, you could Google a lot of this stuff, and they're still going back to the 2000, right before 9/11, saying mm-hmm. that what's his name? I can't think of his name off the top of my head. He was the in the Bush administration. Donald Rumsfeld, we can't find 2.3 million. If you Google it, all of the fact checkers go, well, that was false. It was never lost. Then why did he say it? And why did 9/11 happen the next day? It's just a big coincidence, right? Now we got the Pentagon.
Well, it just so happened that the area that had all the files in it, that was all destroyed too. That showed where all that money went.
Did they get any video of Hillary Clinton with her cell phone running into that place with a hammer and a book of matches? just saying, you know. I mean, it's like I watched the other day. This is funny. It was Marsha Blackburn's on there, and she wants to now release the Jeffrey Epstein flight list for everybody to see. And on Twitter, Roseanne Barr goes, "I will miss her." So, anyway, the Pentagon just failed its sixth straight audit. And let's see. In early October, it was reported the Pentagon was crying broke to Congress. Now this, so now they can't find $6 trillion or whatever or more. Considering that the world's on fire under Biden, now would be a good time to have our Defense Department in order. But no, not really. This isn't planned. This isn't all coordinated, is it? We haven't got Chinese spies paying off our government, Russia, Ukraine, you know, all of the, we haven't got any corruption in the White House by the, hair sniffing piece of garbage called, you know. Remember, yeah, Biden, bite me? Yeah, that guy. The Department of Defense failed its sixth straight audit with little positive change from the year prior. Despite, how do you lose $6 trillion? Now, most of us can't even fathom how big that is. I mean, that's a lot of counterfeiting. Okay? You really gotta have the presses working day and night to come up with $6 trillion. And it's like, I went to the bank and it was gone? It's just, yeah, it was poof, gone. Yeah, it's gone, you know.
Well, we have a lot of these government dark programs that are off the books because they're not exactly legal. So we do a lot of this all over the world, and a lot of it's pretty bad when you start really looking into it.
Well, I'm sorry. I misquoted the number. It's $3.8 trillion. And but that's 4 trillion in liability. So it's actually more, you know, like 7.8. But anyway, so auditors gave 7 of the department's 29 sub-agencies a clean audit in 2023 and no change audit in 2022, according to Wednesday's statement. Although it's not a surprise that the DOD, the Department of Defense, hasn't yet been able to account for the $3.8 trillion enterprise and the $4 trillion in liabilities scattered across the 50 states and 4,500 sites globally.
At least the U.S. national debt is only $33 trillion.
That's not counting the unfunded liability. And then if you get the unfunded liability and total debt, we're like up around $700 trillion. And what's interesting is that we're accruing the debt like at $1 million a minute. And this year, the debt interest on the debt is going to be $1 trillion for the first time in history. And so and the revenues coming in from the tax base because of the Bidenomics working so well is going down faster than the debt is going up, which means that, you know, we're going to be bankrupt now.
So they say, they claim that right now on the U.S. debt clock, assets per citizen, $655,612. Liability per citizen, $629,145. Huh! I can't even buy you a new car between how much you owe the government debt. Not even half of a new car.
Hey, you know, what's a few dollars between friends?
Now, there is a really...
That's, by the way, $690,000 per citizen in the United States at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Not taxpayers, actually citizen per citizen.
Wow.
Yeah, you guys all got $690,000 in each of your little pockets out there, right? And that's going to be good for your retirement, too, right? And all you guys working for the government think that this is all going to end well and it's going to be a soft landing, right?
Well, and meanwhile, the other thing that I'm not seeing people getting much talk on at all, November 16th, this is from TimCast, the Federal Communications Commission has voted to advance a policy that would effectively allow the federal government to take over control of the entire Internet and all of its infrastructure. Some federal officials are calling the rules package unnecessary to ensure digital civil rights. Others, however, warn the language used in the new rules would form a digital socialism and would ultimately give the federal government too much control over nearly every industry.
Hey, having a digital currency is going to be for your own good. We'll control every aspect of your life, wherever you buy things, sell things, go things. You know, we might even have to tattoo your forehead just because it's in vogue. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe a hint.
That way you can't buy or sell anything without the mark of the new approved tattoo that works good on, matches your outfit.
Well, you've got the palm scanners now in a lot of these stores. I mean, you can just go up and just put your hand over it, and that just scans your palm, and then you can just pay that way. It's nice. It's
yeah.
Really, really handy.
I got something they can scan, and it's sort of attached to my palm, and it sticks out in the middle. So
I find this kind of interesting, too, because until Rumble and until Twitter got bought out and until you had some semblances of free speech, it wasn't an issue. It was always start your own platform if you don't like what others are doing. And now all of a sudden it's, No, we need complete control over all of it. Sorry.
Yeah, but. You evil rats, you evil people telling the truth out there. You're probably a MAGA brand, and this is a Republican and Democrat issue, I think.
Well, and that's the thing. It's not that you get free speech. It's that the government gets to control what free speech is in order for equity, inclusion, and diversity.
Well, otherwise, you're spreading misinformation, even if it's the truth. Yeah. So, you know, here's the thing. Okay, so all I can say is prepare, prepare, prepare out there. And if you think the CBDC currency is going to be a good thing and it's going to help you, you're probably listening to Rachel Maddow or what's the fat guy with the big head, the mushroom guy, the mushroom head guy. I can't think of his name. But anyway, hang on a second. We're almost there. I'll look at it in a minute. What are you trying to do? Archive something?
No, so Monday's our meeting.
Oh, Monday we have a. It's on the Zog Fire. So we do have a Board of Supervisors meeting on Monday at 9 in the morning on the Zog Fire.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was a little misinformation. So anyway, all I can say out there is prepare. You might want to stash some food and a few other things just to make sure that you're not completely reliant on the government at the end of the day when it issues the new CBDC currency that's coming in. A government is not reason, it is not eloquence, it is force, and force like fire is a dangerous servant and fearful master. And we'll see you next week.
All gun control's racist. See y'all next week.
Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice.